This is Radio MD COVID-19 Daily, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Caitlin White. Happy, happy Thursday. It's April 23rd. After the news, we'll hear about contact tracing, why it's important during this pandemic, and one tech company's strategy to try and help you log where you go. Hydroxychloroquine has been touted for weeks as a way to help COVID-19 patients, but a recent analysis of the drug found no benefit for coronavirus. Radio MD's Bill Klaproth has this report.
In a new nationwide study, hydroxychloroquine, the drug touted by the president used commonly to fight malaria, showed no benefit in a large analysis of its use in U.S. veterans' hospitals. In fact, there were more deaths among those given hydroxychloroquine versus standard care, researchers reported. And on Tuesday, the NIH released new treatment guidelines that did not recommend hydroxychloroquine for use based on insufficient clinical data. So more studies are needed, but for now, you can take hydroxychloroquine off the big board of potential treatments for the coronavirus. For Radio MD News, I'm Bill Klaproth.
Could you be testing yourself for COVID-19 at home soon? Radio MD Scott Webb has more on a new test recently approved by the FDA.
The FDA authorized the first diagnostic COVID-19 test for at-home use this week. The Laboratory Corporation of America has been given emergency use authorization by the agency. Patients must receive doctor approval to obtain the test, which consists of nasal swabs and saline. Patients will collect the samples themselves and mail to LabCorp. The FDA has only approved the LabCorp home test and has not given their okay to any other potential home tests. Reporting for Radio MD News, I'm Scott Webb.
Medical experts are now urging people to stop wearing medical gloves when running errands out in public, saying wearing them in the community for daily life actually increases your risk for contracting the virus. So how does that work? Juliana Wysura is the infection control coordinator at Roswell Park Cancer Center in Buffalo, New York, and says the virus and other germs get on the gloves just as easily as they would on your hands. Now, healthcare workers change their gloves after each interaction with a patient, after handling equipment, and before moving on to another task or patient. They also have a special way of removing gloves to decrease contact with the outside part of the glove. But many people who are out and about are wearing the same gloves in their cars, to the store, to answer their phone, without changing the gloves. Juliana says the gloves may help you feel protected, but that's a false sense of security and suggests, well, what you've heard a million times now, washing your hands for 20 seconds and using hand sanitizer. And if you're looking for a bit more art and creativity in your quarantine, the New York Times has a nice article featuring work from photographers across the country, sharing their photos of isolation. That piece is called Still Lives, and we'll have a link to it on our show page. Can you remember all the places you went on a given day? Sure, it's probably pretty easy for the past few weeks. I know I've only been in my bedroom, my kitchen, and the grocery store like once. But what about all the places you went when the world was free and open? Some experts are saying contact tracing or retracing your steps is an important part of tracking the spread of coronavirus. So the other day, I called up Prabhurajan Selvarajan, the CEO of Madison Technologies, about ways they are developing strategies to help people contact trace. All right, so let's start off with just some basics. What exactly is contact tracing?
Contact tracing, I mean, the short version of it is essentially, finding each sick person and then figuring out who they recently interacted with, right? But on a whole, what we've seen with this particular pandemic is that it's been extremely helpful. We've seen that in China. We've seen that in a lot of different countries, and it's pretty much old school, detective work almost, right? Mm-hmm. So it's basically finding people that are infected, and then spending time interviewing them, and then finding folks that have been in contact with them. One of the things with contact tracing is that it depends solely on the recall of the person infected, right? So that obviously gives a large margin of potential issues and errors. So yeah, that's what contact tracing is.
Yeah. So just give us a little briefing on, how has this been so helpful in coronavirus? And before we get into your platform, talk a little bit about how it is just, really memory almost, right? Just kind of people being like, oh, I think I went to the store on Tuesday and things like that.
Exactly. Exactly. So how it helps with dealing with the coronavirus is simply that, right? So if you can, you know, figure out who this person has interacted with and who the person has, you know, quote unquote, spread the virus to, you can then contain that, right? You can put all the folks that they've been in contact with into isolation or have them stay at home, or if they're showing any symptoms, you know, bring them into the healthcare system. So overall, this definitely has helped, you know, countries and societies stave off the spread. But I think in the long term, this will be needed to be ramped up as well, right? And because a lot of it is purely recall. And to be honest, like, it's really hard to remember what happened 3 days ago compared to, you know, as opposed to something that happened 14 days ago, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's why we are seeing a lot of focus on contact tracing. We're seeing a lot of focus on, you know, coming up with solutions and tools to kind of help that happen.
So tell us about the platform. How does it work? How did you get to developing it? And how are you seeing it, you know, help with this virus in this time?
So what we do, so, you know, we're not a coronavirus, you know, company, we right? Mm-hmm, so what we do is we build products, right? We build, you know, software, we build products for ourselves and for other people. And as soon as, you know, we started seeing there's a lot of, you know, cases and things popping up, especially here in Malaysia and our neighboring countries, we started looking at the whole process, right? Mm-hmm. And seeing what we can do with our skill sets and you know, try to help contain the spread. While we were looking at the whole process of, you know, someone who is positive, the biggest part that kind of stood out and the biggest part that we felt that we could provide a solution for was contact tracing. And there are many different ways of doing contact tracing. I mean, we've seen apps from, you know, all over the place, right? And I think one of the things that stood out was voluntary contact tracing, right? So allowing people to voluntarily check in, log their movements is something that we wanted to do, because, you know, we didn't really want to invade on people's privacy. You know, we didn't want to install an app on their phone that, you know, tracks them wherever they go. So how our platform works, it's fairly straightforward, but it does require a little bit more involvement of the community and society, right? So what we have, there's two sides of this. So there's locations or places, and these places could be banks, places of worship, right? Or even business locations, right? And business locations and a lot of these kind of locations simply have to go to the website, sign up, and they'll receive a QR code poster, which they can then just place around their locations. On the user's side, all they got to do is just scan the QR code and validate with your phone number, right? So just put in your phone number, you get an OTP, and then that's it, right? So we don't ask for any other personally identifiable information. And what happens then is every QR code they scan, it just logs it into the account. So we also have a feature where if anyone is positive and the hospitals have, you know, has said that they do have the virus, they can then, as a social responsibility, report their status, right? And then what we'll do is we'll flag it in the app, in the web page that we have, and say, hey, you know, this location, there's some updates, right? So that people in general in the communities come together and basically help each other. So there are obviously lots of maps and things where it shows hotspots and, you know, locations with cases. So it's a bit of a bridge between that and then also allowing people to log their movements in an anonymized fashion.
You mentioned that contact tracing is obviously a voluntary act. Do you see the response already being pretty positive? Are you hoping that this will catch on, even though it is, you know, pretty voluntary?
Yeah. So we do have quite a few locations here in Malaysia, at least. But to be honest, because, you know, we are under a partial lockdown, so there isn't much movement. Shops and malls and everything is still very much not fully operational, right? We do see usage in, you know, over 100 locations that we have at the moment. But yeah, I honestly feel this, you know, contact tracing in general would become much more prominent post lockdown, because I do believe that, you know, eventually, I mean, this will become a norm in some shape or form. I think once people are more, you know, updated and educated on the whole process, they would then either consciously be trying to remember where they've been, or logging it down manually in a book, or there are tools that they can then use.
So our podcast is based in the United States. Obviously, you've mentioned you're based in Malaysia. Can you give us just a little perspective, kind of on the street view of how you have been dealing with the virus over there? How has the response been? How long have you been on lockdown? Just what is it like over there, to give our listeners an idea?
Yeah, sure. So we are under a partial lockdown, or what we call an MCO, right? A movement control order. And this started out on the 18th of March. And that was the first phase, right? So since then we've gone into three phases. So it's been 4 weeks and a bit. We are in our third phase now. And what happens is, so every 2 weeks we kind of reassess the situation and then extend it a little bit. I think at the start, when it was you know, communicated that there was going to be this movement control order, there was a lot of confusion, because I think a lot of us have never been through anything of this scale in our lives, right? So, you know, a lot of folks were like, okay, so is this a holiday? Is it, you know, does this mean I can travel back to my hometown? And, you know, a lot of these things were happening. So we had to give it a couple of days to kind of let people, you know, get used to this version of normal for the time being. But I think since then there have been a lot of compliance in that sense, where, you know, roads are empty, people, there's only, you know, only one person can go to the supermarkets, for example, to purchase. There is, you know, the social distancing measures in supermarkets, where there only can be, you know, a certain number of people inside it. So we are seeing that, and I think, you know, as the days go by, people are also understanding the importance of doing this, and we are also seeing a reduce in cases, but I think it requires more than that, right? And it's not, obviously it's not sustainable to the economy and also to people's you know, even mental health to be under lockdown for such a long period. So I think on the ground, you know, the government is definitely trying to do as much as they can. Recently, they've also set up, you know, mental health hotlines where people can call in, you know, and for anyone who needs help to get through this.
This has been Radio MD COVID-19 Daily. If you want to tell us how we're doing or have a question for our staff, email us at COVID19daily@radiomd.com. That is COVID19daily@radiomd.com. We'll be with you again Friday after noon. I'm Caitlin White. Stay home. Stay healthy.